And it's time for Peer Pressure. My guest today is someone who needs no introduction, Dave Smalley. I won't give him one. We'll just go right into the segment. Thanks to Lita Martinez for editing the podcast and to Liz Berg for handling all those podcast duties. Dave Smalley on Peer Pressure here on WFMU. Stay tuned. Thank you for being on the show, Dave.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks for having me. It's great.
My guest, Dave Smalley. We got to go down the list. Every time I say your name, I have to say DYS, Down by Law, All, Dag Nasty, and the Farmhouse Five.
The Farmhouse Five. Yeah, that's the latest and hopefully among the greatest.
Yes. You have your own standard.
Cool project.
And great is understood.
It's just my own twisted definitions, that's all. It's always funny, somebody will ask, they'll ask my kids, you know, oh, what does it feel like to have your dad be so famous? First, after they're rolling their eyes is done, then they just say, he's really not that famous unless you're into punk rock. Like, he goes to the store and does everything else and gets treated like crap by the cashier, just like everybody. So.
At home, are you extremely vocal at home? Are your vocal performances on record a surprise to your children?
Yeah, they're surprised because I would never yell at my kids. You know, it's just not in my DNA. I save all the yelling for the studio and the stage, you know.
Oh, that's good.
Get out all the angst.
Mm-hmm. That's probably perfect.
Yeah.
So can you catch us up? Let the listeners know sort of where you're at now and what's going on for you musically at the moment, Dave.
I'm just got back from a two-month-long Down by Law tour, which was really fun, but really exhausting. That was the most touring in a row, one tour that I've done in a long time. It was pretty great as far as the actual playing aspects of it, but the amount of touring, the amount of shows, because there were, you know, like one day off a week, if that. It was pretty tiring. You know, like I say, when you're on tour, you do it for the 1.5 hours that you're playing every night. You
sure.
know, that's why you do a tour. You know, at least for me, I know there's other people who like to do all the partying and all that stuff, but that's not really my big thing. So for me, it's just playing and meeting people beforehand, talking with people, getting to hear some new stories about, you know, life, and writing your own new stories as you go on crazy adventures of a tour. But, you know, it's that 1 hour, 1.5 hour period that is the reason why you do it. So it was good, but it was tiring. And now I'm back from that. Let's see, I guess the next thing, we just got back from some DYS shows as well. DYS played with Sick of It All and Madball, and that was one of the shows. And then the other show was Sick of It All, Madball, Agnostic Front, and H2O. Hmm. And that was a great, great lineup. I was like my dream lineup, and I was getting to be, you know, part of it. So it was really, really great to see a lot of old friends like Roger from, you know, AF and Lou from Sick of It All, and well, everybody. And I like all those bands as people and as bands. So it was a great experience for that. And then DYS has a couple of shows in November in Hollywood and in Orange County, California, to coincide with the release of the Boston Hardcore movie out there on the West Coast.
Oh, right, yes.
Of that. So we're going to play a couple shows there with Antidote and some other bands.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I'm excited about it.
What's the thing that you do first when you get home from a tour now, and what did you do first when you got home from a tour when you were a youngster, let's say?
It was definitely a little easier when I was a youngster, but I'll tell you what, you know, I was kind of proud of Down by Law, all of us. You know, we've got guys in the band that range from, you know, sort of mid-20s or late 20s to my age, which is late 40s, and you've got a wide range there, but everybody held up and everybody, you know, did well, because it's grueling to tour that long, even, you know, when you're 25. It's a tough thing to be on the road for hours and hours and hours and, you know, sleeping in a strange bed every night and being exhausted at the end of the show every night. It's not whining or complaining to say that, because it's a real blessing to be able to do it.
But that's just the realism of what goes on tour.
Yeah, and I think sometimes people hear, oh, you know, these guys are whining about being able to be, you know, make music and everything. And it's not that. It's just, I think that when you see a band, it's probably good to appreciate, especially like a punk band, you know, not like, you know, the U2s or whatever of the world, but the street level punks that we are, that we represent, and so many of the friends and bands that we love represent. It's not all peaches and cream, but it's great. I wouldn't trade it, but it's, so long story is, that's a long answer to your simple question. Sorry about that. I would say when I would get back younger, I would be ready to go out again, right now I'm thinking, man, I don't want to go out again for a long time, at least on a full deal. Just do some weekend shows and see my family and, you know, pet my dogs and write a new song. Kind of live a boring, straight existence for a little bit. Sounds pretty appetizing to me.
Which bands are you writing new songs with?
Well, that's a great question. I'm writing songs almost all the time, on and off, with Sam Williams from DBL. Also with the DYS guys. We're working on some really great stuff that I'm really excited about. I don't know if you know, but Franz Stahl from Scream and Foo Fighters is in DYS now. So, you know, you've got John Anastas, who was in Slapshot, and obviously DYS, and me and Franz. Al Pahanish from Power Man 5000 is playing drums. Young guy named Adam is playing lead guitar, and the lineup is just really congealed in a way that is really exciting musically. So, I'm really excited about some of the new stuff that DYS is doing.
Was that the lineup for the Super Bowl of Hardcore?
Yes, okay. It is. Awesome. Yeah, everybody was there for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great show.
Which I thought we had a pretty potent show and felt really good. And I was another one where I was like looking at that lineup and I was thinking, man, I'm the luckiest guy in the world. I get to see all these bands and play on stage with them. And, you know, there was a great lineup of bands and great people who put it on, you know. I was really, really happy to be there with those guys.
We have a question from a guest who wants to know if you still have that Doug Flutie football shirt.
I honestly don't know if I have the Doug Flutie shirt, but I can say that I still love the Eagles, BC Eagles, and Doug Flutie was... I don't think I have... I don't know if I have anything specifically from Doug Flutie, but I did get to meet him, and he commented on my spiky hair, and we talked for a couple of minutes about how I got my hair to be sticking straight up, and he was really genuinely interested. He's like, how do you get your hair to do that? And so I was telling him, and, you know,
the first time
when he looked over at me, I'm like, okay, here's Doug Flutie looking at me. He's the god of the school and, you know, the entire state of Massachusetts, and then here he's looking at me, you know, this is not going to end well, you know. And I was just predicting, you know, five football guys are going to show up and just thrash me or something. Okay. No, he was totally cool, totally nice, very interested and respectful, and so he ended up proving himself to be a really nice guy.
Oh, that's cool. That's good to know.
Yeah.
So where you are now, would you have been able to have to foresee having such a long music career?
No, not really, or at least not in the punk world. You know, I kind of came up singing in church choirs and in musicals and stuff like that.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, first music that I did was in a church choir, and then I had a fifth and sixth grade teacher who I actually dedicated a Down by Law album to, named Mrs. Zolby, who really saw that she saw that I enjoyed singing, and so she really encouraged me, and we did classroom musicals, and she would really push me to, you know, stretch my wings. I sang in musicals all through junior high school and high school. And so if anything, I would have thought that would have been a direction I might go, because I liked doing all of that stuff. I liked acting, even though I wasn't a very good actor, but I liked it, and singing and stuff. So if I think if you'd asked me back then, will you be in the arts at all, I would have said, yeah, I might become an actor or a Broadway type. But then DYS ruined me. So, yeah, and if you ask any of the guys, I think in 1981 or 2 in DYS, do you think you'll be playing shows in 2012 and people will still be supportive of what you've done? You know, we would have thought that was crazy.
And be in a valid band.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, we just thought we were just four or five, depending on the lineup, we were four or five kids, didn't really know what we were doing. That was part of the joy of it, and I think that translates into some of the joy of what those early bands across the American hardcore scene had. You know, there was a certain innocence. Like if you listen to the first Adolescence record, or if you listen to, I don't know, Wasted Youth, or you listen to Minor Threat or Teen Idols or Government Issue, the early stuff by any of those groups, you know, and you can go on down the line of so many hundreds of great, great groups. The joy of it was, in part, the joy was the innocence and the fact that there was no career goal. There was no intention to do anything but light the fire cracker in the mind of America and try and run away in time so you didn't kill yourself, you know?
And you really did. I mean, lyrically, when people think about the hardcore era, your lyrics really do come to mind as being bold and being speaking for, you know, a generation and now more than one generation. What else matters for you now? Has your subject matter shifted as you've grown?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I think so, definitely. I think it'd be weird if it hadn't, you know? You know, and people sometimes are mean to those who don't stay the same. But then the problem is the bands that do stay the same and don't evolve at all, they also get grief for not having changed and not having evolved, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's sort of a no-win situation for the artist, I think. You know, like the Ramones got grief when they did End of the Century, because it was a
right.
departure,
mm-hmm.
and it had Phil Spector production on it, and how dare they, right? You know,
yeah.
So it's like, it's sort of an interesting thing. So, I think as you grow, you at least for me, you know, you definitely have to change, and not change like reverse, but I mean evolve and see things through different eyes, things that affect you when you're 40 that didn't affect you when you're 20, you know, paying bills. I think if you listen to a song like Twisted Again from Dag Nasty on Minority of One, and that song is all about dealing with the realities of life, bills and relationships that are difficult and stuff that when you're at a younger age don't really matter so much. That's one example where I would say, yeah, you know, I think I feel more aligned with the real problems of the working world now, you know, than I might have when before I was trying to change the entire world, and now I'm just trying to say, hey, let's treat each other well and remember that we're all one human family while we're trying to make things better.
Hmm. If you had, let's say, like $100,000 to give away, what cause or what would you do with it?
Oh, man, that's a great question. I think I would probably give some to, there's a particular animal rescue organization that I love. They're called Ricky's Refuge in Orange, Virginia, and they are a no-kill animal shelter, and they're really great people, absolutely volunteers, and they have everything from emus to pot-bellied pigs to dogs and
emus.
Cats, and they just are such wonderful, loving people to these animals, and, you know, these animals live a healthy, happy life, so I think I would give them some money. I'd probably give some to arts programs, both, you know, artists, like painters and sculptors and whatnot, and also to the theater arts. If there was an organization that would be able to particularly funnel those to high schools, I think, because that's such a critical time for young people who are finding their strengths and their joys and their talents. And as budgets have gotten tighter and tighter, a lot of theater arts programs have had to cut back. So I would probably give a big chunk to that. And maybe another thing that Jonathan and I have talked about from DYS, Jonathan and I have talked about trying to help out punk rock community people who are in trouble in different ways, either dependencies or have been through illnesses and don't have medical coverage. Now, I've already spent way more than $100,000 with all this talk, but, you know, those are some organizations that I would like to help.
Oh, that's cool.
That I'd like to help.
I just wanted to see where you're at and what matters to you. Aside, I mean, we're assuming that your family matters a lot. And
yeah, you know. Yeah. But if I had $100,000 to give away, I'd be really delighted to be able to do that. That would be great.
One of our listeners wants to know if you have a day job.
I do. Yep. I have a day job. I go to work every morning and stay late every night when I'm not on tour. And yeah, I'm a working man. I'm a writer, and I write and edit for a couple different places. So I'm no different. And I get up in the morning and do the slog to work when mm-hmm. I'm not on the road.
You're just not writing lyrics, but you are getting paid to write.
Correct, yeah. A lot of it is editing, too, like editing articles and things like that. It's a lot of fun. I really love my coworkers, and we have a great, great time together, and they're really respectful and supportive of the things that I do, and I'm very lucky to have a bunch of good people that I be with all the time.
You are lucky. You are here as a guest DJ, so I want to ask you about your first cut, why you're playing it.
Okay, now I'm not sure of the order of what
okay.
I sent you, so I can't remember what is our first cut.
Okay, it's AC/DC, Jailbreak.
Oh, there you go. So, yeah, well, I mean, I tried to pick songs that I wouldn't be here without, and at least groups that I wouldn't be here without. I mean, I think for me, you could pick literally almost any AC/DC song from the first five records, and I could tell you where I was when I first heard it and what it meant to me and all of that. I think AC/DC is a group that defines, to me, almost everything that is good about rock and roll. You know, it's tough. It's got amazing catchiness. It drives you. Like, if you're feeling down, there's no way you can feel down and put in an AC/DC, you know, CD or on your iPod or whatever and not, like, perk back up, you know? Mm-hmm. It's one of those groups that just makes the world a better place through rock. And to me, I definitely would not be who I am and where I am without AC/DC. They're one of the best groups in the history of rock and roll, if not the best. And I'll tell you, one of my fondest memories is in DYS, working out and lifting weights and cranking up, you know, Metallica and AC/DC and Motorhead and Venom and Discharge and, you know, GBH for the punk side and some early Black Flag, you know. But AC/DC, you know, that was the one. That's the catalyst. That's the without which everything else falls. And Jailbreak is one I love because it's not a typical one that you hear on the radio all the time. You know, you can hear Back in Black or For Those About to Rock and a number of other songs, and they're great songs. But Jailbreak, I love that it has a story, a narrative, and the riff is just killer. You know, Angus Young is all the two young brothers, and you know, Bon Scott and Phil Rudd, and it's a great band, you know, from start to finish.
And they make the world a better place.
Yes, they do.
AC/DC. All right, then. So my special guest here is Dave Smalley, and he is picking the tunes for the day. We are starting off with some AC/DC. Please stay tuned.
He said, I ain't spending my life here. I ain't living alone. Ain't breaking no rocks on the chain gang. I'm breaking out and heading home. I'm gonna make a change. Sky. I'm gonna make a jailbreak.
And we have returned. My guest is Dave Smalley. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Indeed. So, thanks for the Metallica.
Anytime. I'll play Metallica all day long if you give me a chance. It's a great group. You know, I remember they came to Boston in the early days, you know, when the Boston crew was in full gear. And, you know, we all, you know, all 20 of us or whatever, you know, we all really loved them. And I would have to say that I'd put my first time seeing Metallica, first couple times, as probably, you know, among the top, you know, concerts I ever saw, and just like epic, mind-blowing, life-changing, inspiring, you know, fill in the blank. So it was just an incredible group. And, you know, that was still when Bell Bottoms Burton was alive. And
Bell Bottoms Burton. I don't think I've ever heard the term Bell Bottoms Burton before.
Yeah, that was a nickname that was given to him, Cliff Burton. And, you know, he was an amazing bassist and you know, player and music and on stage, you know, and just an incredible, incredible player and incredible band at that point, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. And I just have to ask you, is there music on in where you were at by any chance?
Is there music on where I am right now?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
No.
I'm hearing something in my headphones and that, you know, whatever. It's radio and we're on the phone and it's all good. So then I have to ask you, because I know for myself, being in the New York area when the first Metallica record came out, I mean, I was all into, you know, punk and whatever, and there was quite a bit of resistance in at least my group of friends that in terms of Metallica. You know, any kind of metal, it was like, no, that's, you know, like, no, we won't can't listen to that. Where was there sort of like the division there, or were all the punks appreciating Metallica as much as you do?
Well, I don't know if all of them were. I think that's a really good point, a good question. I think that really the interesting thing to me is that the Boston crew, more than any others, I mean, maybe COC, you know, was the other exception, but Boston crew in particular was always heavily rooted in rock and our you know, love of bands like AC/DC and Metallica I don't know if the Boston crew was ahead of the curve or whatever the word is, but certainly we were. That was part of our world right from the get-go. You know, I mean, Alice Cooper, you know, when I was a kid, Kiss, you know, so I always loved great rock bands and always appreciated great great guitar players like Randy Rhodes, you know, for Ozzy Osbourne and you know, stuff like that, and Iron Maiden and all that stuff was just, to me, the whole essence to me of hardcore and punk was that you had music that was in and of itself brutal and challenging, which is what we were all trying to do. So, you know, it was, you know, yeah, you can say that, okay, Iron Maiden didn't, you know, they weren't talking about, like, Discharge, Hear Nothing, See Nothing, Say Nothing in quite as a blunt terms, mm-hmm. but there's plenty of songs by Iron Maiden, like 2 Minutes to Midnight, for instance, that talks about nuclear, you know, Armageddon and stuff like that, which was a huge concern for people in that era, you know, like,
oh, yeah.
people who are young now probably don't have it as much, but, like, you know, during the whole end of the Cold War, Reagan, Gorbachev, and Thatcher, and all that stuff, you know, that was a, you know, these were, you know, these were big, huge issues going on, and like weapons being sent to Germany, you know, American Pershing nuclear missiles to help the NATO forces against the Warsaw Pact. I mean, this was all stuff that was like real, you know. And
yeah.
So to us, I think, you know, for me as a lyricist, some of that stuff that a lot of metal bands talked about, like death and destruction, yeah, that resonated right in there with what I was trying to talk about, which is, hey, you know, we got a very limited window to make this place better. Let's give it a shot, you know. Mm. And so I always loved a lot of those bands just as much as I did any of the sort of more punk stuff that I also loved.
Yeah, I think that there were certain factions of the New York scene that pretended that they never liked the hard rock or the metal, which, and maybe they didn't, but there was definitely a little bit more of like sell your records and that kind of mentality down here.
Yeah, I think, you know, I try and not generalize by people or by bands or by class or by genre. You know, I just always like to hear people and hear things as they are and say, this moves me, just doesn't move me, you know. And all those groups that we've just been talking about, they really moved me, you know. And so I'm very glad. You know, people forget sometimes it's called punk rock.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's not just called punk, you know, it's called punk rock. And if you listen to the Sex Pistols' first record, right?
That was a
metal. Or the Clash,
record.
You know, Mick Jones of the Clash was, you know, he was a rock and roll guy, and so was obviously Steve Jones from the Sex Pistols, and, you know, that first Sex Pistols record is a great rock record.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I always, you know, rock is part of the equation for me.
And then DYS covered a Motorhead song. That was a single, wasn't it?
Yes, yep. We were doing a string of online digital singles, and that was one that we just heard. And yeah, I mean, Motorhead is another group that really, you know, kind of crossed that boundary, I think, between punk and metal and rock, and, you know, and maybe Motorhead is above all of the rest the one that's the crossover band. Like, you can easily go to any punk show, any hardcore show, and see a Motorhead shirt.
Yeah,
you know?
True.
So, you know, that band, you know, another one of those bands that influenced DYS quite a bit. And, you know, and I got to meet Lemmy at one point in my career when Down by Law played a festival.
Ooh, how was that?
With them.
Did you get to talk to Lemmy much?
I did. Not much. I wouldn't say much. I got to meet him. I was, you know, like a scared little kid when I was meeting him, because he was like, you know, is and was one of my heroes, you know. So I was totally nervous, but he was great. And I said, hey, Lemmy, how you doing? My name's Dave. You know, we're in Down by Law. We're playing with you guys today. And he said, I said, I'm in a band that's playing with you guys today. And he said, what's the name of your band? And I said, it's called Down by Law. And he looked at me and thought about it for a second. He said, good fucking name. I was like, oh, whoops, I don't know if I'm supposed to swear on the air. Whoops. But anyway, that's a quote from Lemmy for in my life that'll stay, you know, in my brain for the rest of my life. So.
Well, at least he's somebody that I would be scared of also.
You know, I don't know him at all, you know, well enough to say but I have heard he's a really cool guy, and, you know, but again, he's the epitome of rock and roll,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Oh, yeah, he is. Actually, yeah, I do, you know, I interviewed him a million years ago when I was in between radio stations before I was here in probably 1983 or something. But, yeah, I can tell you about that off mic.
that's really cool.
Yeah.
he's a legend, and deservedly so.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And so you guys decided to cover Motorhead. That's nice to be able to pay homage.
Yeah, it is. It's a really nice, I think, to be able to pay homage, you know, but it's also, like, I think the key of a good cover is to try and, you know, do it either slightly differently, like, for instance, what Down by Law did with its cover of 500 Miles by the Proclaimers. You know, we really changed that song a lot, but still made it our own. So that's one way that I would say is a good way to do a cover. And the other way is just to do it true as can possibly be in spirit to the group that you're covering, and to not do it badly, but to do it really well and you know, pedal to the metal. And I think that's what the DYS approach was to covering that Motorhead song. We've had a lot of Motorhead fans, you know, diehard fans say, you know, that's like one of my favorite Motorhead covers that I've ever heard, you know, so that meant a lot to hear.
Yeah, and I don't know about changing. I mean, I can understand really reworking a song completely, and I don't know if that would work with most Motorhead songs.
Yeah, I think you're right. Good point. I think it wouldn't work, you know. Although it would be funny. I heard a guy one time on tour in I forget what city it was in. I think it may have been in Seattle. And he was just playing an acoustic guitar, and he was in a sort of a restaurant club type place, and he was playing all heavy metal songs on acoustic guitar, but, you know, very different from how they sounded. You know, he's playing everything from Black Sabbath to, you know, probably Motorhead and to everybody else. And
wow.
I remember thinking, you know, I wouldn't have thought that would have worked. And he actually, this guy, you know, I don't know what his name was, but he did a great job of making it work. So.
Oh, neat. Well, it can be done.
It can if you do it well, but I agree. Motorhead is one of those groups that probably you best just, you know, it's pedal to the metal or not at all.
Yeah. We have a question from a listener. They want to know, what are your experiences with punk violence in the old Boston scene?
Oh, well, yeah, there was definitely some punk violence. You know, I'm not going to deny it. There were fights, and you know, it wasn't just in Boston either, right? Like there was, you know, famous pictures of the police, you know, cracking skulls in L.A. at L.A. riots and punk shows, and there were you know, certainly, you know, fights in D.C. You know, and I think a lot of times the fight started in those early days because well, you got a heavy, potent mixture. So you've got loud, aggressive, brutal music that's driving people to hurl themselves into each other at full speed with elbows and boots flying, and then you've got particularly in those early days, a lot of the people who were like visiting didn't quite get it. So like jocks would come to the shows because they heard, you know, about this thing called slam dancing, you know, or whatever. And so the jocks would like, you know, start half the fights. I'm not saying we didn't start any either, but you know, the they would just be like, what'd you do? You know? And like, you know, and boom, and then boom. And, you know, and away we go, you know, the bouncers, you know, at most of the clubs in those days were, you know, basically just extra large jocks. And, you know, so to this day, you know, I actually have a lot of good friends that are bouncers, but to this day, those memories of the early days, you know, of bouncers, you know, really, you know, I've got scars on my head from bouncers, the Rat in Boston, and, you know, they just, you know, you got in fights. It was just part of the deal, you know, when we walked from practice, we practiced right near, DYS practiced right near Fenway Park in Boston. And so, you know, if we were practicing and getting out near when a baseball game got out and you had, you know, thousands of drunk people who were drinking stadium beer, you know, and getting out and seeing like 5 or 10 of us, you know, with leather jackets and shaved heads or spiky hair or combat boots or whatever, you know, it was a recipe for trouble, you know. So, yeah, there were plenty of times when the fists were flying back then. Yeah, it's true.
Well, I'm glad that you've gotten through it. And
yeah, you know, I know, but I'll be honest with you. There's a certain joy to it too, you know, especially at that point in life. You know, you're full of energy and you feel like you're bulletproof, and you got, you know, some friends around you, and you know, so I always say, like, I never condemn gangs of this. I never condemn a person who joined a gang because I was kind of part of one, you know. I mean, we weren't, you know, dealing drugs and stuff like you hear about gangs doing now, but you know, the whole idea of solidarity, of brotherhood, of having a family around you that will protect you and work with you and that you can help them, and you know, there's a powerful allure to that. It was definitely part of the equation back then and I think most punks, you know, if you wandered around on the streets of any American city in 1982, 83, looking like most of us did, you know, there was a good chance that some moron was going to say something or do something, and you either had to run fast or protect yourself. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, punk sort of sprung out of not belonging, and then we all belong to something else.
Right, exactly. But unfortunately, tolerance and acceptance didn't stretch as far as, you know, we would have liked.
No, it didn't. Yeah.
So, but I think it's gotten a lot better, and I'm glad. You know, I'm glad that we had to literally sometimes fight our way, you know, through the street sometimes or through a show, because, you know, that isn't necessary for a lot of kids anymore. I mean, it's like you have, you know, major artists who are considered punk and by the mainstream people in the world, and they're, so you see a person with a blue mohawk or whatever, and it's like, okay, there's a guy who looks punk. It's totally cool. Nobody wants to pick a fight with them.
And the definition of punk, in a lot of ways, I don't even use the term anymore because it gets misconstrued, because there's so much punk acceptedness in the mainstream.
Yes, there is. Yeah, and, you know, what does punk mean? And that's the joy of punk to me, too, and the joy of hardcore and punk is that it really ultimately should be whatever you want it to be. I mean, if you start accepting a given definition for it from others, then you've sort of surrendered the whole point of it. To me, like, people would say punk started in 1976 or 77 with the Ramones and the Sex Pistols, and I would say that is probably true as far as music goes, but I would say that the attitude of Metallica, who we just listened to, was punk, and the attitude of Pete Townshend and The Who in the early 60s and mid to late 60s and 70s was also punk, you know. So to me, it's an attitude, it's doing your own thing, it's it's saying, you know, F you to the world if they're not doing the right thing, and then ultimately trying to make the world a little better.
I wanted to ask you, what's the most active or most effective website for you?
The most active website, is that what you asked?
Yeah, somewhere where the listeners can check.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's the Facebook pages for all the bands, is like the DYS Facebook page and the Down by Law Facebook page. And then I have a Facebook page as well. I actually have two. I have one with my name, you know, Dave Smalley. And then I have one which is called Punk Rock Days, DAYS. And that's actually going to be the name of my solo album that I have coming out. Supposedly this month.
Wow.
And so I'm really excited about that. And that's on there too. And then there's individual websites for all the bands too, but it seems like everybody uses Facebook these days.
Yeah, quite often you go to check a website and it's gone and there's just a Facebook page.
Right, and, right. Which is, you know, cool and whatever easy. I think, but I know that Down by Law still has a page. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a page for Farmhouse 5, I'm not sure.
There is.
And Dagnasty has a website as well, a very active website. And
there actually is a website that's Dave Smalley and the Farmhouse 5 straight through.
Oh, okay, cool. So there you go.
I'd like to.
You know more than I do.
I'd like to ask you about that, but I think I want to get to another set of music.
All right.
So the first song that we have leading off is The Who. And you did just allude to Pete Townshend being a punk.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, actually, there's a song on Quadrophenia called "The Punk Meets the Godfather." You know,
oh,
so
right.
That's back in whatever year that album came out. So, you know, I think that to me, again, you know, if you accept the idea that punk rock is really a fierce independence and dedication, and often I would equate that too with some hard edge stuff, you know, like, and hard edge can take the form of music or lifestyle or you know, breaking a mold in some sense too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, to me, Pete Townshend was all of those things, and he was just amazingly beautiful songs that he would write. And from the very beginning of The Who, you know, through to the very end, well, they're still going actually with he and Roger Daltrey, but there's this beauty to what they do mixed with this angst. You know, it's this unbelievable combination that I don't think anybody ever got. You know, whenever anybody would say, who do you like better, the Beatles or the Stones, my answer would always be The Who. And to me, they are the most important group of the early rock, the early big, huge, great rock bands, that they took lyrics to a much more introspective, personal level. They played in ways that very few other bands were able to play, mixing, like I say, the power with the personal angst, you know. And so I really think that The Who is probably, you know, one of the defining rock groups of all time.
Wow. And well, that's a perfect intro. So my guest is Dave Smalley, and you can go to punkrockdays.com to check out what he's got going on. And the next song in his playlist is The Who. This is The Real Me. We are WFMU. Please stay tuned.
Excellence will happen when all of us
And I have returned. Dave, are you here with me?
I am.
My special guest is Dave Smalley, and he is engineering the playlist. So how about that last one? Elvis Costello, The Jam, The Who. We talked about The Who a little bit. What about the other two?
Well, you know, just as far as, well, kind of both of those groups are on the more melodic side, you know, and some would call them pop groups in a way, you know, they both had a lot of commercial success, deservedly so. And, you know, I mean, we're talking about Elvis Costello, you know, and Paul Weller from The Jam. You're talking about two of the all-time greatest lyricists, among other things, you know. And one of the things I loved about both of those groups, and, you know, why I would include them as part of my, you know, background, is that they really weren't afraid to talk about things in a kind of a bleak way. You know, I think there was a lot of, you know, stuff that was on the radio at the time that those groups were coming up, and, you know, Air Supply or, you know, whatever, and ABBA and, you know, and stuff, and Tesco's going to kill me for dissing ABBA. I'm not really dissing them per se. I'm just suggesting that lyrically there was a lot of happiness out there, and that's great too. You know, you don't always be depressed, but, you know, some of the lyrics by both of those two cats, by Paul Weller and Elvis Costello, were really pretty dark and wry and bittersweet, you know, and showing the world that not only they lived in an immediate sense, but that we all live in, and relationships that are just tinged with sorrow and angst and sort of the world being kind of not always that fun of a place. And that's a reality. And so, you know, they had a huge influence on me lyrically, and realizing that, you know, you can talk about things in an honest way, and you can look at things and be honest about it, you know. And that's part of what punk rock is honesty. And so, you know, again, I think both of those guys really had a huge influence on me, both lyrically and musically, but particularly lyrically.
Mm. And then a lot of times, though, they're very poppy or very up in the music, and you listen, and then you're sort of like, wait, what are they saying?
Right, right. I mean, like watching The Detectives or, you know, In the City by The Jam, or you know, you go further on into The Jam's, lyrics under their career of, Bruce Foxton wrote Smithers Jones, which is about somebody being laid off from work or that he's worked forever, and, you know, gets basically a pat on the head as they shove him out the door, and, you know, and so these are kinds of things where, you know, you sing along and they're catchy as anything, and then all of a sudden you realize that you're singing something that's fairly, fairly serious.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, perfect examples. And, you know, let me see. Somebody does have another question. Let's see. Can you answer this? Oh, what pre-punk rock concerts did you grow up on?
What was the question?
What pre-punk rock concerts did you grow up on? What were your
first? Early, before that.
Yeah.
Before it all kicked in. You know, I didn't go to that many concerts. Pre that, I would say probably, I would go to see, like, I remember seeing the Doobie Brothers, who I still love to this day, trying to think, mostly, like, you know, rock concert, Alice Cooper, you know, stuff like that was sort of where I was coming up from in those days. And, you know, a couple of, I think the first single I ever bought was a Glen Campbell single, you know, so I didn't go to that many because I was kind of still pretty darn young when all of that stuff was starting to come out. So, you know, my earliest concerts that really, you know, kind of affected me and stuff was like the first Dead Kennedys concert in Washington, D.C. at the old 930 Club. You know, some of the early Discord bands shows were hugely important for me. And so I kind of really would say my real concert going, you know, I didn't see Iron Maiden or AC/DC until after I'd kind of was really in the, I was, you know, pretty much a dedicated punk rock and roll guy, you know, so I would say my real musical life really kicked into gear when it did with all those groups.
Mm. Well, your rock music life did, but your choir music life started.
Well, this is true. Yeah, I sang in choirs and all that stuff, and musicals, definitely. I saw a lot of musicals. One of the cool things about my parents was they would just take me to New York, growing up in D.C. And when I was in Boston and still in DYS, they would say, okay, we're going to go see, A Chorus Line or MAME or whatever, and so we'd go see these musicals, and that was really hugely influential. And I mean, my dad also listened to a lot of classical music, and he was a really interesting cat because, to a lot of us today, I think when you hear, certain classical music, it's really hard to distinguish it from, let's say you hear, I do now know with a lot of listening and time and years, I do know the difference between when I hear Beethoven or Mozart or Brahms. They all have distinct styles and structures of their symphonies that, I can tell that, but it took me a long time to get there. And I think most of us, don't necessarily get that distinction. And, so I think part of the cool thing for me was having a dad who could actually instantly identify, oh, this is Beethoven 6th, and, or whatever was on the radio. We'd listen to WGMS, driving around, and he'd whistle along with, Beethoven 6th. It just happened, or if it was Brahms or whatever, or Mozart, whatever, he would just know it. And it was kind of really interesting to me. And I think I learned a lot about, signature melody lines and things like that from having that in my DNA.
Yeah, sure. That's in your background. Yeah. That's really amazing. That's quite a gift.
Yeah, they were really encouraging. The great thing, and I know not everybody had the real, good luck to have parents who were supportive, but I was very, very blessed to have my parents. I remember one time when Dag Nasty was playing at the 930 Club, and my mom and dad were there, and they were by the back of the club, by the door, actually, but they were there, they were there, and, sort of holding each other tightly, in fear as people were singing along and jumping off stage and everything, but they were there to support me, so I was really lucky to have that. And I remember one time we were in Spain with Down by Law, and my parents were there just on a vacation, and they scheduled everything to go see this show. And it was so great because at the end of the show, things start in Spain really, really late. Like, we were trying to find dinner before the show, and it was like 8 o'clock at night, and every restaurant was closed because they don't even open until 9. Like, 9 is early, particularly on a Friday or Saturday night for them. I don't know if that's still the case, but it was then. And so we finally found dinner, and I went back, and the other bands played, and then it was Down by Law that was playing, and they were there. And after the show, I was talking to my folks out in the lobby off to the side, and all these kids came out, streaming out of the club, and they saw my parents, and they said, you are his parents? And yeah, we are. So they all got my parents' autograph, and my parents were delighted with that. They were just tickled pink with that. It's a great memory for me of my folks.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and all these really nice kids and who were very respectful and very, enthusiastic. So it was great.
Wow. Oh, that's awesome. So great.
Yeah.
So I'd like to jump back to the music in the looking at the time here. And
sure.
You are a fabulous guest, Dave, and I could talk to you obviously for more hours than we have set aside.
Oh, thanks. Well, it's been really a lot of fun. Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
So the next song that we're going to go into is the
Undertone.
Yeah.
And again, sort of the Undertones fall into that. Actually, but I think the Undertones just fall into the pure fun. They did have some darker lyrics as their albums progressed, and I respect that. But, especially the first, they had a lot of teenage angst of, like, not getting the girl.
Kind of
lyrics, but it's just a pure fun group, and again, sort of like what I was saying about AC/DC, and a very different musical style, but the Undertones is one of those groups where you just can't be down listening to them. It just makes you happy, and these were working class kids from Ireland, and this was their honest life portrayed, and so Again, the honesty was really, it resonated with me very much, and just the joyousness or joyfulness, whatever the word is, of the music, you know, was just really, really so exciting to me to hear that. And, you know, again, great sense of melody, great players in the band, underrated players, and really a good band.
And just a super, super live band. They were, in my recollection, one of the best live shows I ever saw in my life.
Oh, that is awesome. Yeah, that is awesome. And they still play. They have a different singer now, who I have not seen, but who many fans of the group that I know who have seen really enjoy. So,
he's good.
So I would encourage people to go support them.
Yeah, he doesn't have the Feargal Sharkey thing going on, but he's I think his name is Paul, and they did play here on WFMU several years ago. You can find it on the Free Music Archive, actually. The
performances. Excellent. Yeah. I mean, yeah, Feargal Sharkey is like vocally so distinct. But the main songwriters of the group,
the O'Neills.
You know, yeah, the O'Neills they're still going strong. So, it's still a definite worthy investment of your time and musical investment.
Indeed. So next we are going to listen to The Undertones at high recommendation of Dave Smalley, who is my guest. We are WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope. Please stay tuned. Smalley, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hello, sir. And just coming out of two great songs, the Message to You, Rudy, from the Specials, Mirror in the Bathroom, and of course preceded by The Undertones. What do you have to say about our ska brethren?
Yeah, I mean, I love old Jamaican ska, and also, you know, the ska revival movement in particular in England in the 80s. And, you know, that was headed, of course, by groups like the Specials and the Beat and, Madness and some other groups. And I just really loved all that stuff. And I still remember going to the English Beat Show at the Channel in Boston. And, all these sort of more artsy people were really annoyed that the Boston crew was there, you know, because we were fully into it. And, you know, we were dancing as we like to dance. And, people were really annoyed, and they even wrote about it in a review in the paper, you know, like, oh, the annoying punks were there, and, you know, just, you know, but, hey, this, the whole thing is do be who you are, you know, so, you know, that was, but they were a great, great group. That first English Beat record was really, first Specials record, both of those were pretty much untouchable, I think.
Yeah, great records.
Yeah, English Beat was a great live band, too. I never got to see the Specials, unfortunately, because they didn't do a lot of touring in their heyday. But I did get to see the Beat in the early days, and then plus not that long ago, a couple of years back. And,
yeah, they are still around, right?
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they were great.
Oh, good. Well, it's good to know that, because that I wasn't sure about.
Yeah, and it was actually the English Beat and Madness.
Oh.
So it was... I'm sorry, no, it wasn't Madness. It was Bad Manners, excuse me.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Buster Blood Vessel is okay. Yeah. So we're just about to get to the last set, and I wanted to ask you a little bit about, because I know you got two songs coming up. First of all, there's a new Down by Law record.
There is. I'm really really a fan of it, and you know, sometimes when you're an old guy like me, you know, you kind of have these times when you just feel this certain energy, and I would say I've been really blessed to have felt it a few times, and at least once with every group that I've been in. You know, I think certainly the first Brotherhood record from DYS and Can I Say from Dag Nasty had that, as well as Minority of One, I think, really, from Dag Nasty, and then Down by Law had it, and all had it with I think with our second All record in particular, and I love the first one too, don't get me wrong, but and Down by Law had it with Punk Rock Academy Fight Song. There was just a certain energy or chemistry, like you could just sense that this was something, you know, you're almost playing above your head in a way, you know, and you're just kind of riding the wave like a surfer would ride the wave that he gets. It's a really good wave. It's the perfect wave, and he's riding it, and it's high, and he doesn't know if he can ride it, but he's going to try. He's just going to stay with it, you know, and if he does ride it all the way out and, you know, and does a good run, he's really elated, and there's this energy and chemistry that I think that we had with those records, and we had it with this newest Down by Law record, which is called Champions at Heart. It just had this certain, I don't know, just, you know, we just kind of felt it. It was all very, very clear that this was something that was, you know, that there was a chemistry going on that, you know, you just don't argue with it. It's just luck, you know, and you kind of just ride the wave, you know. So we did this new album, and a lot of people are really, really, a lot of DBL fans are really happy with it. And, you know, we just did a tour on a national level called the Tonight We Unite Tour with the Casualties and a number of other really good bands that I quite enjoyed, and including Flatfoot 56 and The Sheds and, you know, some other groups. And, you know, it was just this really great chemistry of all the bands playing. And then, but the nice thing for Down by Law was this was our first national tour in so long, and we're playing to a lot of people who didn't really, maybe they'd heard of Down by Law, but they didn't necessarily know it, or they knew just like 500 miles from hearing that, or, you know, they knew maybe Punk Rock Academy Fight songs, but they didn't necessarily know, you know, every song. And it was really great because they reacted so favorably to the songs and to our shows. It was really a really warming feeling, you know, a nice feeling to have. So I really appreciate all the people who were so kind to us.
Awesome. And then that's super. And I know that's on the DC Jam label, Champions at Heart is.
Yeah, it's a really cool label. The guy who runs it, his name is Darren, and he is, you know, I've always believed in the DIY ethic, which is why I'm supporting, you know, a show on, I'm so delighted to be on WFMU, you know, because that's a station, you know, that I listened to for many, many years. And I think I told you when we first talked, you know, that's a station that I, you know, would put on, this is in the pre-internet days, you know, I would put that on, you know, when we got within range, you know, and whenever one of my groups was playing in the New York or New Jersey area.
That's so great to say. Thank you, Dave.
Yeah, I mean it. I wouldn't just say it, and it's really true, and it's like, it's so cool to have, you know, heartfelt, independent people doing good stuff, you know, and it's really what I was trying to encourage all along through my career, and you know, fanzines and radio shows and independent labels. And this guy Darren, his label right now, the bands that have come to mind, I know there are a few others that I'm probably going to miss, but not missing them out of any bad will or anything, but the ones I can think of right off the top of my head is Down by Law, Fishbone, The Addicts, TSOL, JFA. You know, these are all bands that are like just great, you know, great groups, and you know, like TSOL and JFA and Fishbone, you know, the Addicts. I'm pinching myself that I'm on a label with all of those guys.
That's quite a roster.
Yeah, it's a great roster, and he's doing it because of the right reasons, you know, which is the whole thing. Like, I'm going to put out music by bands that I really love, you know, and that's the most important reason you can do anything in life. Do something because you love it. And you only get one time in life, you know, you only get these 60, 70, 80 years to do something, and that's if you're lucky, mm-hmm. and that you get that many years. And so you got to make it count. You got to believe in what you're doing and try to, you know, live your life to the fullest. And that doesn't just mean have fun and you know, play video games all day. I mean, that's great too. Don't get me wrong. I play them too, you know, but just like, you know, realize that this is your shot. And to the best of our knowledge, we don't get another one. And so, you know, make it count and do good things and make a dent.
Mm. That's exactly why we're all here. And you've just summed up everything, Dave, right there.
Awesome. Thank you. That's great. And have fun, too. You know, there's the other
course.
Kicker. You know?
Yeah. And then, so we're going to hear that, and then we're also going to hear the Farmhouse 5 version of a Dag Nasty song. What is the Farmhouse 5?
Well, that's a little project that some friends of mine who all live in Canada are involved with. One of my friends up there called me and said, hey, we want to do some songs from the different bands that you've been in and, you know, that we all grew up, you know, loving. And we kind of want to try a bluegrass approach. And I said, oh, I thought about it for a minute. I said, that's awesome. And kind of, you know, getting back to what we were talking about earlier, and like when you take a song and cover it, you know, maybe you can give it a completely different spin and make it your own. And that's what this is. And it's with members of different members of Good Riddance. Sean from Good Riddance is on drums, and Curtis from SNFU is on bass, and some other cats from a band called Dirt Loader. Colin and Johnny are playing on it, and you know, there's mandolin and banjo and piano and you know, it's a harmonica. I'm not sure if any of those are on this particular song that we're going to play now, because what we are, I think, going to hear is one of the original demo mixes.
Oh, right, yeah.
So there's been some changes to the final album, but, you know, the songs are just such a delight to hear them in this whole different way. And, you know, it's really nice to have done it. And you know, we haven't really decided where it's going to come out or when or you know, what's going to be the goal of it. But we when it was all finished, we all said, you know, we all looked at each other and said, wow, this is really cool, you know, really distinct. And so we're gonna do something with it, just not sure what yet.
Okay, great. And then you said your solo record is coming out this month?
Yes, it's called Punk Rock Days. It was actually funded through Kickstarter, which is a website or organization that where people promote their project, and they ask for a certain amount of money that they're trying to raise. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of pressure-filled, because if you don't raise the money that you say you wanted to raise, then you don't get any of it. So let's say, just pulling out a number, you know, out of my head, like let's say you want to raise $10,000 to do an album, or to buy a van for your band, or some people are selling like wine coolers that they invented, or, you know, it's a whole ram. It's not just music. And
Right. Let's
say you want to raise $10,000 for Project X, you have to raise that $10,000, or else, like, if you raise $9,999, you don't get any of it.
Ooh.
So it's really, and you have 30 days to do it. And it's a really neat concept. Again, it gets to that whole DIY ethic, you know, and I really was glad to support it and to be a part of that. And so all of the songs are, not actually all of them, a number of them are songs from my career, and then there are a few new ones that I recorded, and I had several very talented people helping out, including Mike from Darkest Hour, Sam Williams from Down by Law, who's just an unbelievable songwriter and guitar player, and Brian Baker from Dag Nasty and Bad Religion and Minor Threat. He played on a couple of them as well. So, mm-hmm. So we had a lot of people who are really just talented musicians. I recorded it at three different studios, including Inner Ear, which is the studio in D.C., where a lot of the great Discord bands recorded, like Government Issue and Bad Brains and a number of others. So, it's been really, it's a really fun album, I think, and really unique, and I'm excited to have it come out.
And we will definitely be looking for that. And
yeah,
so Dave, I just want to thank you, and I'm so psyched that you are still really producing things, because you're just one of the most energy driven and vital people, you know, that I've ever met in the scene.
And, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Yeah, you know, and just to I really appreciate you being like a leader in the punk rock community for so long, and your vocals just probably really helping generations express themselves, like speaking to what was possible for kids who may not have really even known what was possible in their lives. I do truly think that what you know, your musical efforts have just turned people around. And
that really makes my day. Thank you so much. You know, I really believe in it, you know, and you got to do it if you believe in it, and try and, you know, again, there's a way to be real and get the gritty reality of life and still be encouraging at the end of the day, and I try to keep that in mind too as part of what's important, and I'm trying to encourage people. So it is a responsibility, you know. I take it very seriously, and I really respect and love all the, you know, people I've been fortunate enough to meet over the years at the shows and written to me and all that kind of stuff. And it does, you know, for anybody who thinks that stuff doesn't matter, it really does. It's a huge thing to, you know, I'll meet somebody at a show and they'll tell me a certain song got them through a certain period, and then we'll end up talking about their lives and their adventures for, you know, a little while, and it's like the greatest thing in the world, you know, to learn about other people and you know, realize that we are all one people and with common struggles, and but that we can really ultimately help each other and encourage each other.
Yeah, thanks, because you really have made it obvious that we are all connected.
Absolutely, and music's the glue, you know, it really is. It's the glue, because you can have somebody in Topeka, Kansas, and, you know, Santa Barbara, California, and, you know, wherever, you know, Trenton, New Jersey, whatever, pick your city and place, and it all sort of, we all become one through this music that we've all been part of for so long. So that's really a joyful thing.
Absolutely. So with that, we're going to go out with some Down by Law, some brand new Down by Law. This is Knock This Town, Dave Smalley. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, and take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Just me in a streetlight, watch a worker rushing by. Cars are racing, people walking, I swim against the tide. I never felt so alive before, I never felt so all alone. This town could be a prison, but this town is my home. In the sea of sameness, I don't feel like the rest. Through the bad times and the good, through the
track of my life. It's got some flaws, then it came so to real. We might complain, but here's where I remain, giving it strength to me. I never felt so free. This is our day. Walking down the street the other day, you were going one way, I was going the other. We both walked right by, we don't say a word. We used to be this close, we used to be like brothers. And now, because of one time, one word, one phrase, behind us, lion and island, behind us, lion and island, behind.
And that wraps it up for today's podcast. Thank you to Lita Martinez for editing the podcast and to Liz Berg for all the other background work. We are WFMU.